Not me. Those other people. I don't do that, obviously. But yeah, other people do that, you know, because they're not obeying the rules. I obey the rules, and other people might just get a bit too casual about, you know. Friends come round, you're going to be like, fuck it, come in. Anybody, please come in my house and speak to me. You know what I mean?
Good evening, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, yeah.
Bored.
I'm fucking bored. Been buying T-shirts. T-shirts with words on. Or like band T-shirts, like I'm in some kind of midlife crisis.
You know, I know that. I didn't buy any band T-shirts, but I did copy you and buy some Merck.
Merck.
Yeah.
Merck.
Things with words on, because there's so many now with unofficial things that just hint at what they're actually branding.
Yeah, I'm going to buy my niche reference T-shirt, yeah.
Yeah, very... Yeah, I that was a thing. I was trying to get the right balance of niche. There was some that were just so niche, and I was like, I would love to have that, but that's just too much. You know, like such...
Too much niche.
Obscure references. You know, where it's like logos of restaurants from fictional TV series, like Simpsons or something.
Yes.
I was like, that's probably too much. But you actually went and were even more obscure and have a fictional restaurant for me... podcast, which I'm
Athletico
impressed with.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with. Yeah. I'm impressed, personally impressed with. Very good. Yeah, what was it? It's Slaughter's.
Slaughter's, that was it. I couldn't even remember it myself. I was hoping you'd say it. Yeah, Slaughter's it was. Yeah, Slaughter's like meaty goods or whatever it says. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very funny bit. Yeah. So, yeah, I like that. It's good. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we're all fucking bored, aren't we? Yeah. Gotta figure out a way of spending money on boring, stupid shit to try and, I don't know why.
That's what I'm doing constantly. I'm surrounded by little toys. Actual toys as well.
What are we talking about today?
We're talking about the lockdown and the exit out of lockdown, the roadmap. Boris has often said that it's an irreversible exit, and I am hoping that it will be.
Okay, good. Is there going to be a little monologue for that as well?
Yep, monologue. 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't want to alarm anyone, but I'm starting to feel a little bit optimistic. Just a little bit. Dangerous, I know. We have some hope to cling on to now, though. Things are returning to some sense of normality. Sweet, sweet normality. It's been really nice seeing people out and about these last 2 weeks. Shopping, eating, drinking, laughing, living their lives. Doing things that used to feel ordinary, normal. It's strange to feel optimistic. I spent months wishing my life away, looking forward to being released from lockdown. Lockdown for me has been hellish at times. At worst, it's been, taken me beyond breaking point, shall we say. It was necessary, wasn't it? Indisputably, it was necessary. It may be necessary again. Can't be ruled out completely. I know that, even though I hate to think about it. For weeks now, a single word's been ringing around my brain. Irreversible. 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 It's got a kind of unequivocal quality to it, hasn't it? It's a word that the Prime Minister has used repeatedly when referring to the cautious but irreversible roadmap out of lockdown. Come on, Boris, don't cock-tease me. Irreversible. 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 That underpins the entire cautious nature of the roadmap out of lockdown. And actually, I don't believe we should rush to bring it forward. The vaccine program's going from success to success, but it's still patient to be wise and put up with the infringement on our ability to live our lives just that bit longer, so we're in a strong position when we are set free. The lifting of lockdown restriction comes as deaths from the disease plummet. Over 33 million people in the UK have received at least one dose of a coronavirus vaccine. Over 11 million people have received second doses. We're consistently delivering more than 300,000 second doses a day. All 9 priority groups have been vaccinated. Also, there was no rise in cases caused by reopening schools, which is very good news. So the government should stick to one message now. The vaccinations are working. Get yourself vaccinated. Continue to follow the guidance because we're nearly there. Now is the time for optimism after a miserable fucking year. Just to be clear, I'm not a COVID skeptic, but nearly 130,000 deaths so far in the UK, that's pretty devastating and conclusive. This is a deadly disease. The COVID skeptics have been proven consistently wrong, time and time again. They're wrong on false positives. They're wrong when they push the idea that most people were dying with COVID rather than from it. Utter bunkum. Throughout the pandemic, the Office for National Statistics has shown the percentage of people who died with COVID, where COVID was the primary cause. In November, for example, this was 90%. So it's not all sunshine and lollipops. Still, the word rings in my ears. Irreversible, irreversible, cautious, but irreversible. If and when a third wave comes, it should not be anything like about as previous waves, thanks to the vaccines. Barring a vaccine-resistant variant letting rip, we should not have to go to a full-scale national lockdown again. Instead, the government and its advisors should be on hand to explain why, to an extent, a rise in cases and indeed deaths are expected, but tolerable as long as cases are manageable and the health service is coping, which, again, it should, thanks to the success of the vaccine programme. Israel should inspire hope. There are hardly any COVID-19 infections there anymore because vaccines work. And we're going to have to learn to live with the risk, not out of indifference to suffering or the false dichotomy between economy and public health, but out of acceptance that is essentially inhumane and unrealistic to continue the cycle of lockdown and lifting indefinitely. Where does it end? Because end it must. There's an epidemic of mental health issues, there's a rise in domestic violence and child abuse, backlog in criminal court cases, increase in unemployment, poverty and homelessness amount to a social disaster. Most local councils, many already at breaking point financially, have reported increased numbers of people needing help for homelessness. They warn that poorer households will face disaster unless support is extended beyond the pandemic. And all the while, the government gets a little too used to its new powers, as do the police, and it's going to be very difficult to wrestle them out of its hands. Now, I accept a cautious roadmap for the health and safety of the nation, but we must aim to make this exit out of lockdown irreversible. COVID-19 is a long-term challenge, and government policy must be sustainable. This hellish cycle of locking down and opening up again isn't, not in the long term. Irreversible! Martin. I wish I could do voices and accents and be amusing like that, but think of weird shit that he thinks of. Sorry, stopping the flow. Yeah. Go.
I mean, you can't do accents, can you?
So. No, at all. Not even. I don't think if you said to do my accent, I'd be able to do it. I would do, you know what I mean? Like.
I mean, you're doing it now.
Yeah.
You're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, true. But if you asked me to do an impression of myself, I'd probably get it wrong. I don't know what that means.
How would that work? All right, back on subject. So we're talking about monologue. We're talking about the lockdown. Talking about coming out of lockdown and your firmly held belief or your firmly held opinion, conviction that it must be irreversible. Yeah.
Yeah, firmly held conviction.
How strong and firm is that conviction?
Well, in the article when I wrote it, it was quite firm and fairly strong. Well, I tried to work from a foundation of uncertainty and make it clear that I'm not some kind of lunatic who thinks it's not a problem. I probably, in retrospect, in looking back, would have liked to have added something along the lines of, you know, they do understand that if it literally does have a third wave where it is killing a lot of people and the NHS can't cope, then obviously I'm not saying that there shouldn't be measures brought in. I'm not as certain as that. I'm just thinking that with a vaccinated population, we should be optimistic that the next wave will not be as severe as the last or the one before that.
Yeah.
And we should be therefore... I don't want to say hesitant. It's not really the right word, but the bumps in the data are bound to happen, and you don't want to overreact to them. I mean, if it's very clear pattern, then, like, you know, we would have to do something. But I think this cycle of lockdowns and opening up is it just can't go on forever, can it? Basically, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, but what we're talking about is therefore is getting used to a certain amount of, you know, deaths, right? Cases we're all pretty comfortable with, I assume. I don't think anybody's like just got anything against COVID just for the sake of it. I think it's the impact of COVID, like the deaths, right? So, or the hospital numbers going up. But if we've got to be like, we are talking about being comfortable with a certain amount of deaths from COVID.
This could still be an outbreak in the winter that's as bad as flu is, which would be quite bad. But we put up with that.
But that's quite a difficult conversation to start having, isn't it? And not a conversation that I'm particularly comfortable having either.
Well, no.
And it's quite hard to say, you know, as a society, and who speaks for society is one thing, I guess. As a society, how many deaths are we comfortable with in order to like retain our freedoms?
Because no one's talking when you talk about I'm comfortable with this many or whatever. If you said a few hundred,
like 50.
You're not talking about your own nan or gran or older brother or uncle or whatever, are you? You're not talking about your dad. You're talking about other people I don't know, really. So
digits. Yeah.
So when you read articles about it, you know, I have read articles having this discussion, and often says the kind of cliched phrase, probably use it myself at some point, that we need to have a national conversation about this. When you think about it, it doesn't mean anything, that does it? Because how do you have a national conversation about anything? It's not just the government will have a conversation with itself about what it will do. There's no national conversation, really. It doesn't make any sense. How do you have a conversation about it? Yeah, but it is when you look at the certain level of tolerance from deaths from quite a few other diseases and diseases that are contagious, including flu, or in earlier decades AIDS, and you know.
But they haven't come in this way, have they? During this age of like mass information, I think that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and that makes it very hard for the government to respond. And often the government's misjudged the public mood because there's a lot of conservatives who have a fantasy about liberal Britain and then find that, well, at least in polling and in opinion polling and focus groups, people aren't really very liberal at all in this country. They're quite happy with authoritarianism to a certain degree. Yeah. To a certain degree of you know, not true authoritarianism, but they, you know, they always endorse a lockdown, and you know, when it comes to quite a lot of different issues, they're not wholly a liberal population just yet anyway.
Well, neither's the government either.
Well, yeah, far from it, exactly, trying to reflect that, I think. And you know, but we would expect there to be a resurgence of it in the winter. And it could be bad as flu is if we say we have no restrictions. Like, there wasn't much flu around last year, but you know, there will be again this winter, and there will be COVID-19 as well. But if there's a fully vaccinated population, it's going to be a very interesting experiment to see how it reacts when most of the population is vaccinated. It surely must basically increase the threshold from where we start to bring in restrictions on people's lives when people have the vaccine and expect to be able to get on with their lives to a certain degree. I don't know what legacy measures will be in to mask wearing or some degree of social distancing. I'm not sure. Those are the kind of things maybe you should return to first if there's some kind of resurgence before you start closing everything. But, you know, where do you draw the line? It's, who am I to draw the line? I don't know. And again, it's coming back for me. You deconstruct an article and have to say, you know, I'm not quite as certain as it sounds. You try and argue, make a point with a certain amount of conviction, but, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just a guy behind a desk, you know, wondering these things, you know.
One of the things I think about with this kind of, you know, return to normality and how, you know, they talk about like a cautious but irreversible return.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, how, you know, because those words, cautious, and, you know, they talk about, like, trying to retain certain aspects like social distancing and mask wearing in some instances. Mm. They don't marry up to, like, how people, like, behave, do they?
No, not at all.
Especially, you know, like, well, and, you know, people passed, like, huge amounts of judgment on, like, kids going out into the parks as soon as they were allowed to. And, you know, everyone, you know, all over each other, no social distancing, leaving loads of litter.
Yeah.
And all, like, you know, that was the thing, wasn't it, a few weeks ago. And I just wonder when they're talking about this, yeah, this cautious approach, whether they understand and that they actually expect that will not happen. And what they're actually trying to do is, like, damage limitation by, you know, saying these words, would it just, like, make it slightly less?
Yeah.
And sometimes it just feels like, but then what, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is that they talk about in this kind of cautious and measured way, and then people don't do that because people aren't like that. People don't
especially now there's phase a back where into normality. No,
they explode back in.
June the 21st is now Freedom Day.
Well, yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. That's, June 21st is going
to
be Freedom Day.
I would expect that day to, or whatever is the next day, I guess, to be fucking mental.
But what happens though is, like, the government put out this message, and then when people do go ahead and just be normal and you know do fucked up things, everyone's all, like, up in arms. And it's like, well, no, this is what people were bound to do.
Yeah.
And we all get to be like up, have an uproar about it. It's like, are you kidding me? Kids are going to go to the park and, like, you know, cause a load of shit. Of course they are. They're fucking kids. Like,
did you see the footage from Israel where they're all in the streets celebrating? And it's like, that's what it's going to be like when it gets to that point where they're saying this is it's over on June the 21st or the second next day or for weeks after. People are going to go mental. You know, people are going to go out because you're going to be able to go out. You know, in theory, if they're literally saying no restrictions, as that's what it says at the moment, then that means you can go to the pub whenever you want. I mean, you know, you can just go out and do things normally. People are going to do that because they've been desperate to do that for a long time. So yeah, that's going to be interesting because that's going to be a real test to see how the vaccine,
and they'll go back to doing all those things that people do, like people get in fights, people, like, you know, they get arrested. This is why, you know, all of the dirty things of society that we've been hiding over the past year, they will come back. Yeah. But they're not, like, they are part of the fabric of society. That's just how people behave.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's going to be a, yeah.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah. Let's get out there. Not have a fight. Just, well, you know, have a good time.
Yeah.
No fights.
Anyway. And then there was that, you know, there was that poll, wasn't there, about, just talking about distrust of, like, other people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How other people would reintegrate.
Public opinion about them. So it was a question of, do you think other people will obey the rules? And then will you obey the rules? And everyone was like, yeah, I'll obey the rules. So it's other people that won't. And by a really big margin as well. I can't remember the exact percentage, and I've been too lazy to find it. But that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I'll obey the rules. As soon as things are, every rule relaxes, I relax a lot more and beyond what they're asking me to. Because, like a lot of people, like, you know, the whole guy, I always thought the garden, letting people in the garden is a real test, because that's when people start going, fuck it, come in the house. Not me, those other people, I don't do that, obviously, but other people do that, you know, because they're not obeying the rules. I obey the rules, and other people might just get a bit too casual about, you know, friends come round, you're going to be like, fuck it, come in. Anybody, please come in my house and speak to me. You know what I mean? If there's no bump in the data from, it'd be interesting to see the data reflect on that, the effects of lifting that restriction, because I think that's a pretty big one.
Mm. I mean, lots of people don't have gardens, I guess, is one thing.
Well, that's another thing, isn't it? Then
you
those people...
Check your fucking privilege, you garden cunt.
So, yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's true, though. That's another good point, though. Then they will want to take advantage of other restrictions being lifted to get, and they want to get out and about because they've been in a flat or a house without a garden for a long time. So, yeah, they'll just straight up to the park or pub or whatever the fuck is open now. They'll be out there. They want to get out of their flat or, yeah. Sorry, place without a garden. I've got a garden. sorry if you haven't got one.
Get the garden. yeah, we kind of gone off on a weird tangent there. unsurprising.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
It's Bob, but it's boring, isn't it? It's done. Oh God, surely it's got to be. This whole weird life experience has got to end at some point. There's got to be some kind of end. I know that they keep saying those. Like, yeah, what I was going to say about those, the footage from Israel where people are dancing and shouting. I can't remember which scientific advisor for the government it was, said that basically that sort of thing will not happen. There'll be no end celebration like it's V-Day. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't quite V-Day, but you know what I mean? There will be, because that's just what it will be.
There will be, yeah, of course there will, yeah. So, well, it's like when they brought in the last lockdown. You know, the kids like fucking out in the streets the night of the lockdown was put in place, like getting fucked up and yeah, exactly. Rubbing up against each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
this is the last time they can possibly do it.
It's going to be more. It will be much more difficult to bring a lockdown back in after lifting everything, and the length of time it's been, and the success of the vaccines going to, you know, of the rollout program, and if they start championing the success of the vaccines, and then to say, oh, you know, we've got to lock down again, is a more difficult political decision. I think I'm sure they'll be more hesitant, but we shall see. Make no predictions,
you know,
as I have to say before.
I mean, they will have to if the numbers dictate, they will have to. Politically it would be difficult, but politically it would be difficult to resist it as well. Yeah. If numbers are, if it looks like the NHS is going to be overwhelmed again, then they will have to lock down before that happens. If, you know, if the death rates get above my acceptable rate, or, you know, John Smith's acceptable rate, whoever decides that what the acceptable rate is, then they will have to.
Yeah, and they've got all kinds of new tools.
We as a society should. Then that's the other thing. Isn't it? We do like to, like, make, in these instances, it's like, well, we like the government to make this decision for us, because really it's not a decision we want to make ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But if the government wasn't there, we would probably, you know, take that decision ourselves to decide to stay in, and for the sake of good reason.
Yeah. If it gets severe again, which we hope it doesn't, obviously, but, you know, and it shouldn't really if the vaccines are so successful as they seem to be. But if it does get severe, they will go again, and the government's got all kinds of tools in its box, which is not going to readily give up anytime soon. So, yeah.
What are those tools? You like the what you got your eye on in there? What's your eye on in there? You got some kind of lusty eye on the tools they're using? What's
that?
Well,
this is an axe. This is a Lego axe. I'm just looking.
Nice.
That's one of the tools. Maybe that's how it slipped into my head. It's one of the tools in the box. It's like an axe, if you will. Right. Yeah. We should axe the fucking lockdown. That's what we should do. Right, that's the end of it.
Oh, nice. There you go. All right. That's the end of that bit, so we can stop talking about lockdown now.
Yeah.
All right. Good. Okay, yeah, I wanted to, I thought it might be fun to talk about this thing, because it's just been fun listening to your experience of it over the past, month? It's quite recent, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, obviously you've, like, we've talked about on the podcast the past few times, where you've had your kind of mental problems, to to put it bluntly,
yeah.
I couldn't think of a better way of saying it. Well, I could, you know,
mental health issues.
You've had some issues arising from, you know, a disturbed past, but obviously lockdown. Like many people have experienced, you know, it's been very tough for many people. And
I didn't have a good starting point
in
lockdown, and then I just decided to go crazy. Yeah, we get
the
weird.
Recent one has been quite the recent one has been quite hard, but you have been trying to I can't think about turn a new leaf, sorry, that sounds horrible. try and turn a new leaf and try and return yourself into like a your back into your more sane way of living.
Stable,
so you're trying to
calm.
You know, to give up some trying to phase off some of the vices and try and adopt some of the more like you know, normal day-to-day things. And part of that, when we've been talking, has been starting to play this video game.
Yep. So the video game is called Disco Elysium.
Yeah, and it's been quite funny because obviously it's something to occupy your mind, but I mean, I've played the game a little bit as well now from you when you've been speaking about it, and it's quite funny that that would be a thing that somebody would use to try and return to normality.
That's true. So, yeah, it's a role-playing game, and that's my thing, role-playing games, especially isometric view, in-depth role-playing games with text, old school. That's what it is. I think it's been around for a couple of years, I think, and I only just came across it just before, luckily, they released a sort of final cut, expanded edition, director's cut sort of thing with all extra features and fully voice cast. And it's set in a totally fictional world. You're a detective. And so I read a bit about it, so I was like, oh, that sounds weird. Nothing really prepares you for it, I have to say. And I think the first thing I'd mentioned it to you is that I'd read a review and someone said something about, oh, you can be a really good detective or you can be a sort of McNulty type, you know, from The Wire. So I was like, oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to be like this pissed detective. That sounds brilliant. But it was, I don't know if, I mean, I haven't played it as much maybe as the person reviewing it, but I don't know if he remembers The Wire, but I mean, McNulty in that was a bit of a loser, but it was sort of a cool character. In this game, you just sort of play this pitiful loser who's a drunk, who's got amnesia, got so drunk and took so many drugs that he doesn't really know what the fuck is going on. And I think the most interesting thing about it was I was playing it for a little while, and then I tried to share my stats around and put, there's one category of statistics called psyche, which I put all quite low in. And I didn't quite understand what I'm doing at the time, but that affects like your morale, and you have this, so you have a health meter and a morale meter. So the most fascinating thing about it was when I'd played it for a couple of hours and then I was set back about an hour's worth of game time because I suddenly had a game over screen, which I wasn't expecting. And the game over screen came from these morale dropping solo. And I'd said something in a conversation and then sort of felt humiliated that it was game over, not because I died, but because I had a nervous breakdown and ended up living in a bridge, or living under a bridge, drinking and shouting at people. So I was like, yeah, it is a bit interesting for me to be cheering up and calming down by playing a role-playing game in which I play a drunk, unstable fucking loser. But it's very, very funny though. It's kind of, you know, playing it late at night, and it's kind of fascinating, and played it for a few hours, and it's laughing a lot, but it's just sort of depressing, and I don't feel depressed when playing it, but it's like, it sort of made me feel bad, but it's weird playing this really depressing atmosphere, depressing character. It's been quite calming effect on me, I think, actually. I've enjoyed it, and yeah, it's funny to look at. I think that's what I'd be like if I was a detective, actually. That's playing not this heroic idea of myself as a detective, but yeah, you'd probably be just a fucking idiot bum. It's a good game.
Yeah. But yes, I mean, but would you be quite as like schizophrenic as this game?
Like, the exchange of what? Yeah, if you're playing it late, you've told me you've played it late at night while you're sort of monged out and near asleep, and that is very, really, it does get surreal. Like, you have these voices talking back at you, and you know, trying to convince you one way or the other, and then it's all the statistics playing out. It's all this mathematical game of the statistics you picked playing out of your control.
Yeah.
But that's like the narrative you hear. So it's a story being told to you, but yeah, all through this.
Yeah, you have all of these components of your psyche that are like that, and yeah, obviously, like, depending on your personality type, some parts of it would be more dominant than others.
But then
one thing I find interesting is in it, or like disturbing or unsettling actually, is when you're in certain situations and then there's like a new voice that comes in. You know, it's like, it's all actually the same voice. In terms of the voice actor, it's the same guy and he's really good. But it's just suddenly like this new kind of like element which comes in who hasn't spoken very much. And it'll be like your kind of like rage instinct or like the Inland Empire. Yeah. Is that one? Yeah.
That's one of them.
And it's, which is suddenly just kind of cut through and it's like, oh, it's very, very unsettling. It is. It's very, very like, yeah. It is. I feel like it's what it might feel like to be schizophrenic.
No, and that's when it gets really dark. That is what it's like. And then, you know, there's parts where there's part of your character design called conceptualization as part of your, and that led to me at one point having a few minutes where I was just sort of commenting and having an inner narrative about some graffiti on a wall. And it's just nothing.
Oh, yes, like, yeah, that's one of those.
It's pretty strange. But it's all the situations you get in where you've never got the upper hand in any of the situations I've been in so far. You're always begging. You're always in this kind of pathetic position. Very unusual position to be in a game where ordinarily become like an invulnerable fucking hero or villain or whatever you want to be in these types of games.
Yeah. So where is your character now? Where are you up to?
The last thing that happened, and I played a little bit before we started recording, which is actually why I was a bit late as usual. The last thing in the game, which says it all really, was I went back to the hotel that I woke up in and didn't have enough money to pay and begged the guy to let me stay the night and then tried to use my authority to say, well, I'm a police officer, so let me stay, and he's just like, no. And that's it. So I don't know what happens next. And the next thing I was thinking of running, because you're investigating a murder or a lynching, and I've rammed the corpse into a fridge now to keep it preserved for further investigation. And I think the next thing I'm going to do is go there and take its boots to wear. So it's an
boots
unusual game. Yeah, you can take the boots off the corpse and wear them, apparently.
Oh, right, yes. Yeah.
And you do things like you buy alcohol and put it in your hand and you'll just continually drink it, smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
It's a very fun game. It's very weird. Also, I should say it's beautiful as well, because it's all, it looks like a
painting. It is, yeah.
So it's all...
Yeah, it's a watercolour thing going on with it, isn't it?
It's a very old-fashioned
I definitely revelled in one of the first tasks, which was go and buy a packet of cigarettes and smoke the packet of cigarettes. Yeah. Like, as somebody who, quit like six months ago, last time I had a cig. Yeah. I was a heavy smoker, heavy smoker before that. And that I did actually get quite a lot of pleasure from doing it. Let's get them six.
All role playing games, I always drink. It's like, get drunk, harmless drinking. Initially, you wake up in the first part of the game, is your first few tasks are finding your clothes that just scattered all over the place because we were pissed up the night before or whatever. I was just reveling in that almost immediately. It's like, this is a very unusual place to start from a game. I'm already loving it. Yeah, a bit close to the bone sometimes.
Good. Well, I'm gonna we're gonna play a bit from the game as well. Play some of the monologue to get people to understand a bit. And I'll put some music underneath it that I will make.
Okay. Whoop, 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 whoop. Don't know why I did that. Let's move on.
There is nothing, only warm primordial blackness. You're conscious for men sinning, no larger than a single grain of malt. You don't have to do anything anymore. Ever. Never, ever. An inordinate amount of time passes. An awareness creeps up on you. A mass lies hidden in your dead angle, soaking in some lurid acidic sauce. It's bloated and shameful, a pool of meat surrounding you. This is a terrible line of questioning, and it will only lead to more awareness of the meat thing. is to the loss. Not after all the damage you've suffered to get here. Some of it irreversible. Stay. Sail with me through the abyss of Pelagic, son.
You wouldn't like it if I told you what was back there. Why'd you think you had to bludgeon yourself into oblivion? Did you not sense yourself marinating? Poured so much over yourself, got a bit carried away, did we, Chef? All there, in evil apes, and the evil apes are juking it out on the ball. You're one of them. It's basically all just evil apes juking it out on a giant ball.
Good. Should we round up then? Is there anything we want to like tease for future episodes?
Yes, we have another guest on, a notable guest. I should have thought of a way to introduce it before I started speaking.
We said we were going to have James Bloodworth as a guest on a previous episode, but we haven't actually ever had him on, have we?
No, I did actually trail that and just turn out to be like, also we did,
we could still do it, I'm sure.
It just didn't happen because he said we were going to rearrange it for after Christmas.
It hasn't happened yet.
Let's rearrange it for the new year, we said, and then things happened.
Yeah. And it's still the new year, to be technically.
Yeah, but it was a good 3 months of if you only turn your computer off and it takes a long time to start up again. But next week on, we have the assistant comment editor from The Telegraph, Madeline Grant, who,
yes,
I think we can both agree, is a good guest to have on. So that should be interesting. And this is not a joke, by the way.
Of sufficient quality.
Yeah, it's not. This isn't a joke. We are, unless there's cancellations, which we'll put on Twitter, that's not happening, just to be clear.
Next time.
She's got it in a diary, she said. So that's not we're not lying this time. Listen to our Christmas episode. I think we end up so pissed we were saying, was it New Year's? We were just introducing all kinds of guests. I mean, there was Arnold Schwarzenegger at one point, I remember. But no, Madeline Grant.
Racist.
What? What's racist? Saying that is racist, or he's racist.
Sorry.
Madeline Grant, assistant commentator, will be on the next podcast, which will be out in 2 weeks. Okay. Follow us on Twitter at UnravelPod. There we go. And we're on Facebook.
At UnravelPod.
We're on Facebook too. Go on. Give us a follow.
As ever, I would like to say, just like take care of each other and tell the people you are taking care of to also take care of the next people that they come into contact with.
And if you're feeling anxious about getting out there, just get out there. Go on.
Yeah, get outside and
get some sunshine on your face and go to a pub or hairdressers or whatever it is you want to do. Try it.
Yeah, get your fucking haircut.
Get your fucking haircut. It looks ridiculous. Mine's really, really grey. I can't wait to get mine cut really short so I don't have to look at all the grey hair. Terrible.
Excellent.
Bye.
Goodbye.